Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And welcome to another Top 10 Debate. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to talk about things we didn't know about WWE in 2018. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestling culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett to discuss his list, 10 things you didn't know about WWE in 2018. And I have to admit, Hamflett, reading through this, 2018 feels a lot more than 3 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. We've said on a multitude of podcasts just how fast wrestling moves now, faster than ever. It's only ever getting faster. And yeah, when I was writing this list, I felt the exact same way. There have been changes to the landscape of the scene in North America alone, let alone elsewhere, you know, in New Japan, in the UK, everywhere. That just dates so much of this content, or if not dates it, timestamps it, I think, from a very particular period shortly before and during WWE became the version of itself today. 2018, if I'm not mistaken, if it wasn't that, it was definitely 2019, was the year that we first heard that damning statistic that as the TV rights fees kicked in, consumer spending would account for less than 50% of WWE's overall income. And that was quite a turning point when the tickets and the T-shirts and all that sort of stuff no longer accounts for half of your earnings, then you no longer need to account for all of your audience in the way that you used to. And I feel like in the last 2.5 years, we've seen the ultimate upshot of that in WWE, in most of WWE's output, not all, most of its output. And I think that's why 2018 stands up quite well as a pretty good year for WWE's like outward facing product. Not all of it was perfect. It almost never is. But it's a year I hold memories of 2018 quite fondly for the good stuff rather than diving deeper into some of the bad, of which some of which we will absolutely get to here.
Yeah, I can't. So is it 3 years since Evolution?
Yeah, 3 years.
All the times they could have done another one after, anyway.
Mm.
Well, not against that just yet. But one of the big things that happened, of course, in 2018 was the return of Dean Ambrose. An epic moment on Monday Night Raw. I still remember discussing it with you boys in the office and probably on podcasts. But, I mean, Jon Moxley himself, and when you look back on it, he's kind of justified, isn't best pleased with how it happened. And once again, it's Vince McMahon meddling. You know, you can debate this on many people's returns. Should they say the person's name before they come out? Should they hint at the person before they come out? Or should they just hit the music and let the fans work it out for themselves? I suppose this was a combination of several things here.
Yeah, and as like Moxley pointed out, it was kind of to the detriment of what he was hoping for. As you pointed out there, there's numerous ways to do this kind of return. When they have announced the name, the idea would be that you're trying to sell a pay-per-view or draw a rating. So it's less about the surprise of their return, more about the emotional response to it. So again, let's pretend that we're still in 2018 and this is crowds and not a pandemic. you're going to watch the show if you're watching at home. You're going to buzz about it in the arena. And then when that music hits or when that wrestler comes out, because you know it's happening, you get to unleash all that emotion that you've been bottling up, looking forward to actually seeing this person. When it's a surprise, you want to milk that surprise pop as best as you possibly can. That music hitting, if it's famous and if it's known, and obviously Dean Ambrose's music was well known, that would get that kind of guttural, visceral reaction from fans that didn't know to expect him coming to the building. What this made me think of, reading back on this, I found a quote from Moxley's now famous interview with Chris Jericho ahead of his AEW debut, where he lambasted WWE creative, but in a way that was like almost quite dignified and almost sort of respectful rather than passive aggressive. He was just being honest about what he believed were the certain failings of that company in terms of his character. And it reminded me of something that I know for a fact we celebrated on podcasts, which was the Chronicle special on his comeback and watching his personal and professional suffering through being injured and through being away from the thing that he loved the most, or at least at the time, the thing that he maybe believed he loved the most. He was rehabbing and getting back to this was fighting to get something back that he knew was missing in his life, which was wrestling. And all of that energy was fed into this one moment where, looking angrier, looking jacked, looking scary, he could return as Dean Ambrose, but the edgier Dean Ambrose that had basically isolated himself in all those months when he was rehabbing. And he gets there and he gets to Gorilla, and you can only imagine the kinetic energy that's built up inside it. You know what? You don't need to imagine it. You were there in person. You've seen it being exercised at Double or Nothing 2019.
Yeah.
Picture the energy he had for that moment. It was almost certainly building and building and building and building in Gorilla, just waiting for somebody to say, go, so we can storm through that curtain and be Dean Ambrose. And instead, he has to stand there, and it's building, and it's building, and it's building. And Seth Rollins says the words to Dolph Ziggler, if you've got a Scottish psychopath in your corner, I'm going to have a lunatic in mine. And the pop happens there because the fans know what they're getting. And then the music hits. Leather jacket, jeans. And then a second pop happens there. And then Dean Ambrose appears from behind the curtain. And a third pop happens there. And there's no chance of that third pop being as energetic as the second or the first, which is all that he wanted, which was all that like Chronicle was documenting, all that he built up to getting back. And he probably felt by the time the first segment was over, he's like, oh, and it's gone. Cool. Like all of the frustration he was feeling before the injury was almost immediately back. And the last vestiges of it were in the turn on Seth Rollins, which of course happened later in 2018. And that was gone a week later too. That was gone within one gas mask segment, within one dreadful pay-per-view match. Like every time he tried to force that feeling back into his body, it wasn't let out through this scream, this primal rage. It was let out like a balloon, gently releasing the air bit by bit by bit by bit. That's how you force one of the best wrestlers in the world to leave your company and go and work for the opposition.
Yeah, it's really disappointing when you look back on all that. And like you say, probably that coupled with the getting an injection and shooting on his best mate's genuine illness didn't help matters. So I'm sure everyone has a lot of regrets. And speaking of regrets, let's talk about Crown Jewel, shall we? Oh, what a year it was, 2018.
I still feel like, for all that we started this podcast by saying, oh, Crown Jewel was years ago, 2018 was years ago, this, I can't believe it's a different time now. Nothing makes me feel more 2021 than thinking about Crown Jewel 2018, because if Greatest Royal Rumble was the entryway into the content era of WWE, which is to say producing a show not for an audience, but for massively wealthy paymasters, in one case, networks, in another case, Saudi Arabian crown princes, Crown Jewel was almost a celebration of the ugliness of the content era. Nobody needs a reminder of this, but the show was going ahead in the shadow of Jamal Khashoggi's murder. Lots of coverage still exists out there that, like, I personally, and I know you will be too, very proud of whatculture.com. It's all there on YouTube if you want to go looking for it. Like, proud of how we dealt with that situation. Not at all proud with how WWE dealt with that situation. They basically buried their heads from the bad press. They were forced every now and then to put themselves in front of news cameras, but the gist of it was, look, we've got a paying customer, and we want to do what we can for the fans, and there's huge demand for our product over there. It's not about politics. It's about putting smiles on faces and all that garbage. The show went ahead because they wanted to preserve the integrity of a 10-year deal. and all the money that they were going to make from it, the dirty, filthy, blood-soaked money they were going to make for 10 years. And that's why Crown Jewel happened. So it was with a certain karmic joy that the main event collapsed in the way it did. Because of all the people to be front-facing for the worst version of the WWE product, the product that we were told was there to put smiles on faces, the product that we were told was there to do away with the politics and the socioeconomic strife of, you know, various Saudi Arabian human rights sort of floutings and whatnot, was going to be this one between the return of a legend and three other sort of icons, pillars of this organization, getting to show themselves tonight. And as WWE's integrity crumbled, so too did these pillars. In fact, so did three of them, because the one guy that hadn't wrestled in 8 years was about the only one keeping it together. The Undertaker himself, as evidence on his documentary, deeply regretted it. He was still there chasing that one last great match, and he just hoped with his friends that he would have it. He didn't. Triple H was injured within 5 minutes, and let's be honest, he was expected to be the general of this thing. And he leans over to Sean and says, "I've just torn my pec about 5 minutes in." And so I was like, "Oh, all right, I guess it falls on my shoulders then." Because what was on Kane's shoulders? A mask and wig that was too loose in the heat and fell off. So, like this cartoonish BBC sitcom Last of the Summer Wine brought to WWE thing manifested in almost like a celebration of WWE's ugliness, to the point that Shawn Michaels, which was the kind of, to bury this match, I'll take any opportunity, but to talk about the entry in the list specifically, was it took Shawn Michaels a long time to admit just how much he regretted this. I think we all remember that interview. It was against like a blue background that he did immediately after the match for WWE.com. I think it was on YouTube. And like, he dodges every question about the quality of the match. He's just like, yeah, it sure was something to be out there again. Yeah. It was, forgot how tired I got doing that. Like, he doesn't want to pass any comment on what he's just been a part of, because he knows it's been a total disaster. And he's just thinking, $3 million, $3 million. As soon as I get home, $3 million. What am I going to buy my wife and kids with that money? $3 million. Like, that's the motivation for him. But he said years later, quote, after watching The Undertaker's documentary, quote, "I had no idea that from Undertaker's standpoint, he was looking at this, that it might be the one that he could walk away on. That's something when I think to myself now, oh my goodness, I wish I'd known that. For me, it was just a chance to be with my buddies. All I can do is apologize to the guys." Yeah, like, fair play. You can tell that man's found religion, because he's obviously done a lot of soul searching to come up with that.
You imagine that bit where he's trying to blow the hair out of his face and he's thinking, yep, this is the one we go out on our shield on. That's it. That infamous shot of Michaels and Triple H sitting in the corner and Michaels just sort of smirking over to him going, what a load of bollocks this is. I'm just looking at this Crown Jewel card as well. I forgot what... By the way, quick maths, the four preceding matches, that being a semi-final match for the World Cup, the WWE Championship match, the Universal Championship match, and the World Cup final match, same length of time as the main event. Main event is 28 minutes.
15 of that is like Kane setting up a chokeslam. He's a governor now. He works at a desk all day. We know what a sedentary lifestyle is like for your fitness.
And I will never, ever, ever forget. I think it was me and Cleary doing the stream, possibly. Maybe me, Cleary and Phil, to be fair. But certainly me, Cleary and Phil did a preview and predictions and stuff. And we're like, well, tough to call. Who's going to win this? Who's going to win this big trophy? Maybe it's going to be Mysterio. Maybe it's going to be The Miz. Maybe it's going to be Kurt Angle or Dolph Ziggler or Seth Rollins. It's a shame McMahon wasn't even in the tournament.
Yeah. It wasn't going to be a John Cena either, was it? Who looked at the PR and said, you know, we're going to do that show. Take me out of the tournament, please. And they did.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's move on and talk about something good from 2018. We alluded to it earlier. Evolution. Why on earth haven't they done it again? And tell us all about Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair setting records at that epic show.
I mean, the fact they haven't done it again means that they can't yet taint it with a poor sequel. I will say that. Like, that's obviously not the reason why they haven't. Evolution was probably end-to-end. Somebody will correct me in the Twitter replies, no doubt. But for my memories, at least, end-to-end the best pay-per-view of the 2010s. Main roster, WWE, all those caveats. NXT TakeOvers might have been better. You might have preferred an AEW show. But in terms of WWE's main roster output, I can't think of a better end-to-end pay-per-view than Evolution. The crowd was white hot. The time was right for WWE because, of course, they were about to promote Crown Jewel and women couldn't even appear on that show. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very nicely marrying up with the fact that, oh, well, we've got an all-men's thing. What are we going to do to try and counter the bad PR? However, the timing was right from a roster point of view as well. It was such a goddamn diverse and packed show that made just about perfect use of everybody. I say just about because Sasha and Bayley were done a little bit dirty in a six-woman, but that six-woman against the Riot Squad was class. Like, yeah, them and Natalya teaming up to beat the Riot Squad was really, really, had no right to be as good as it was. Total banger of a card. No duffers whatsoever.
Dark match was. I didn't realise this.
I want to say, I've not got the wiki. Was it Tony Storm and Rhea Ripley?
It was. Tony Storm was wrestling Io Shirai on the card. It was, we'll just hoy Rhea Ripley and Dakota Kai out there.
That was it, Dakota Kai and Rhea Ripley.
Probably have quite a good match, those two, weren't they?
UK Championship or something, was it?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely brilliant. Lita and Trish working the opener was inspired because the crowd were red hot for them. The match was good, but it was very much like a Legends Tour thing and it didn't want to like get in the way of the stuff later on. The Battle Royal was amazing because it was basically like an apology for that Kid Rock abomination at WrestleMania 25. Like, the women all got individual full entrances and got to work all their own individual spots. Everybody got over. Yeah, just an awesome, awesome night in front of a white-hot buzzing crowd. And Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair, one of the best matches of the year. You've got Becky Lynch, like, this is the genesis of the man character. So there's that feeling that you can't replicate, that when something is hot and it's only getting hotter, there's just magic around everything that persona does. Charlotte Flair is proving herself to be her, like, perfect rival in this epic chapter of their... Obviously, they're kind of like their career opponents at this point, aren't they? But this was such a wonderful chapter of their feud, because to sort of reset... Becky Lynch had turned on her at SummerSlam, won the belt the following month. They'd worked quite a short match with a cheap finish at Super Showdown, which was in Australia, if you remember that. So the pressure was kind of on them to have this banger singles match that the man character had promised, you know? It was like, wow, this character's super over now. It's time to have a match that kind of like delivers on that. And they went just short of half an hour and nearly killed each other. 28 minutes and 40 seconds remains a record for a women's singles match on a WWE pay-per-view. And that includes, with the exception of last woman standing matches that obviously go 30 minutes. That includes the likes of Sasha and Bayley at Hell in a Cell 20, Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks at Clash and Hell in a Cell 2019. All these epics that you think about, these two still went longer and not a second felt wasted. They beat the living out of each other. Charlotte absolutely made the man as a character here. Like, Becky Lynch was totally made as a workhorse, as a fighter, as a brawler. Like, every version of the character she needed to be happened here. And what was so brilliant is that it was a perfect way. It was such a perfect way to tee up Becky Lynch for that dream Survivor Series match against Ronda Rousey that was then taken away from us. Oh. So Becky Lynch had all that momentum. And rather than it being stopped by Nia Jax's punch to the eye, it was only enhanced. The thirst needed to be quenched. And it was at that time that you could feel something in the air for the likes of a WrestleMania main event. Talk started there that this character was over enough to headline WrestleMania. And you could just, it almost feels as though, I remember like the Royal Rumble comeback where she lost to Asuka, and it was in the opener, I think, and it was like, yeah. Well, Christ, how's she gonna get to WrestleMania now? And those signs in the crowd, it was all very much, she doesn't just have to get there, she has to close the show. This is like, and this was definitely the moment where that character, I don't know what the Steve, like, I probably did an article at the time about the various comparisons to Steve Austin. I would say this was, if this was Becky, if Becky bleeding in November was Steve Austin bleeding against Bret Hart, this was Becky, this was Austin's first Survivor Series match against the Hitman. This is when you absolutely knew that this guy was for real.
Yeah, I did feel, just quickly mention the Royal Rumble. Looking back at the time, I was like, oh my God, yes. Yes, Finlay, pour in the match. Do feel a bit bad going, yeah, Lana's injured. I've been thinking about all that looking back. But yeah, what an incredible story in a road to WrestleMania at 35 that was. I just spoke about Becky Lynch setting a record there. And this, I'll tell you what, this doesn't just get thrown together, this podcast. We're going to stick talking about records and speak about Raw's longest ever match. And I'm trying to cast my mind. I said this before we started recording. In my head, I was doing my usual thing of laying in bed early on a Tuesday morning and watching Raw before I get up and do all the work stuff. I don't remember them even advertising this. Maybe they did say it was going to be a gauntlet, to be fair. They must have done, one would assume. But they certainly didn't say, yeah, it's basically going to be the whole bloody show. It was one of those things where I was watching it and going, and I'm watching it on double speed, but Seth Rollins has been in there a mighty long time.
Yeah, I love how we can both make the safe assumption that something on Raw wasn't promoted beforehand. That's a tale as old as time, let alone 3 years at this point. Yeah, the record breaking gauntlet match. I was going to say Iron Match, the gauntlet match on Raw, 106 minutes, and to be honest, 106.55, so just shy of 107 minutes. Raw's longest match, that'll obviously never be topped ever. Cheating a bit because it's a series of individual matches, but it all was part of one great thing. And what threads the whole thing together, much like you've threaded together this podcast from one entry into another, is the individual record set by Seth Rollins. 65 minutes in that goddamn thing. The longest, I believe, anybody's ever wrestled on Raw. And that does include Iron Man matches, because obviously they would go an hour. Seth put five on top of that. I tell you what, you can question the patter in the Rollins-Lynch household, but you can't question the cardio, can you? Those two could go. Yeah, I mixed feelings writing about this match because I thought it was a worthy inclusion, because I do think the nature of WWE's television is that you are left permitted to forget about stuff like this now. I don't think there was once upon a time, I don't think they'd let stuff like this go. Chris Jericho talking about beating The Rock and Austin in one night is one that springs to mind. Seth Rollins never stopped to call himself the 65-minute man beyond maybe 1 week. I think this helped inform the Monday Night Rollins nickname that he got as the year went on. This idea that he was, so like, we're basically a year out from him defeating Brock Lesnar, and for all the hideous things that Seth Rollins encountered in a bad 2019, he felt like the guy to do it, didn't he, at WrestleMania 35. He felt, and I think a lot of that was baked in from a 2018 where he just worked really hard. Not all of it was entertaining, and I'd be lying to our listeners if I said it was all good, but he did just graft away. And this is an example of that. You don't go over an hour in a match and not like sweat half to death and work your bollocks off for it. The match itself was entertaining in patches because of, you know, there's going to be great drama when a guy's been in there that long. It was star-studded for the day. Roman Reigns was in it. Braun was in it. Elias at his most over was in it. Finn Balor, still a workhorse, was in it. The Miz, because the Miz gets everywhere, doesn't he? John Cena, as was kicking around, as we talked about in another podcast the other day, John Cena's entire modus operandi was just get into a big match at WrestleMania, and he was trying like 80 different avenues to do it. I love that. It's one of them little trivia notes that I'm quite astonished that WWE has already neglected to bring back up. Rollins comes out every week in a suit. He spent a year calling himself a messiah, and at no point did he say that he wants wrestled against the best in the industry for 65 minutes. And I find it strange that they've allowed that to be forgotten. But again, we are talking a lot about, we're into the content era now. This is just another week and then on to the next one, you know? But we don't forget. Thanks, Seth. Theth.
I'm trying to remember who actually even, let me just double check this, who even emerged victorious to that one? They obviously got the title match at Chain. Oh, wait.
It was Roman, wasn't it?
Wait a second. What am I doing here? Oh, it was to build. So yeah, what am I on about? Yeah,
yeah, it was for the Elimination Chamber build because they were like they all had a big multi match.
That was it. That was when they went. They went. You know, everyone knows how it works. Elimination Chamber, seven people, right? What?
Four pods and two.
Yeah, bollocks. We'll just have three people start because who cares? But yeah, I remember that. That was epic. And I do remember now. I was thinking, like, what were we doing podcast wise? That was the days of the Raw recap and the SmackDown synopsis on What Culture Extra, RIP.
Oh, wow. So, Colton, if he's listened to this podcast, will remember our thoughts on it from the time. But almost everybody else that subsequently found us, you're going to have to dig so far back into an archive that it might no longer exist if you want to find it.
Yeah.
I would say check it out wherever you get your podcast, but I'm not even sure that they exist anywhere on the internet. I would never normally say this. I hope somebody illegally acquired those and put them online somewhere.
I kind of hope they didn't because I sense I wasn't this relaxed, giddy presenter that I am now. I was probably very nervous. And Michael Hamlet, what did you think? Should Elias have won this?
Oh, crap. I'd sound like Dana Brooke cutting that promo on Ronda Rousey. Well, Wilbon, what I thought of Raw.
Let's conclude with a tiny thing you may remember in 2018. it almost doesn't feel necessary to mention. It's not really relevant 3 years later. But yeah, the Elite almost went to WWE, didn't they? That'd have been bloody different.
Well, the Elite, the Elite was what we all still said because All In had changed the world, just as the guys had promised it would. All In, which of course we now know was like basically used and abused in Ring of Honor for their facilities and people, bankrolled by Tony Khan, who was already kind of half involved, rather than the, we're going to run a 10,000-seater indie show to win $5 off Dave Meltzer. It's like, well, it's not quite that, is it? I can see a leaf growing from that long Pinocchio nose of yours. But yeah, so like All In was, now we know there to be a soft launch, a backdoor pilot for what became All Elite Wrestling. Great, all great. Not straight for Ring of Honor, but you know, like Cody and the Bucks were All In, no pun intended. So it was Kenny Omega, so was everybody that we now know to be involved, Hangman Page as well. WWE evidently did know that, and either way, tried to put deals together that would convince people in the process of forming a company to not form a company. So on one hand, so we're going to talk about this offer in a second, but on one hand, I like the idea that WWE were completely in the dark to All Elite Wrestling, and they were making an offer thinking that they could be WWE and just slap their proverbials on the table as usual with all their money and say, well, you're going to sign this deal because we're going to make it too good for you not to sign.
Mm.
On the other hand, I also like the narrative that they did know about the potential formation of AEW and believed that these deals would convince them to change their mind. Yeah. Executive Vice President, what? We're going to put Being the Elite on the network. Why would you not want to do that? Like, I love that. I love that arrogance more. Yes. So, funnily enough, it was quite nice for me, this, because I went looking for Dave Meltzer's reporting of the deal, because he went to... amazing this. He went into massive amounts of detail in The Observer about this deal. I wonder where he got the information from. about, like, what they were offered and what they turned down. And I found this information through an article on whatculture.com. Well, Michael Hamlet. Hey! So it's quite nice to go back and relive doing the news for this one. I also got, I want to give credit to either Ben Roy Turner or Adam Nicholas for knocking up a lovely thumb that you can actually see in this article it would be if the AEW guys ended up on the network. It looks, if you imagine what the old network desktop used to look like with the guys on it, it's just tremendous thumb. But yeah, so Meltzer had all the information, obviously. And it was just unbelievable. So obviously, Hangman Page, Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks were all finishing up with Ring of Honor. That was the last of their deals. New Japan was coming to an end anyway for them in January with Kenny Omega. But it was the last of their deals that they needed to see through. Somebody should write a book about all this. It's just like such a fascinating time. And the All In show ultimately changed their value completely. Where they were once about to be ex-Ring of Honor guys that WWE wanted back, all of a sudden, they looked like they could be promoters. That'd never happen, would it? They looked like they could be promoters. So WWE knew they had to go really, really big. Hangman Page was going to be offered main roster headliner money to work NXT, where Triple H obviously wouldn't have protected. Hangman Page would have been over as like their top star, wouldn't he? He would have gotten over straight away as a big... Imagine like Bobby Roode coming over from TNA times a million.
Yeah.
That would have been Hangman Page coming over from New Japan and Ring of Honor to NXT. Young Bucks and Cody were going straight to the main roster. Young Bucks are being given, quote, AJ Styles money, which at this point, AJ Styles is like the long, like, been WWE champion for a year. So, huge deal, you have to assume. Cody the same, which I love, because he's pied them off when they've said, why don't you sign this crap deal with Stardust for five more years? And then turned up 2 years later to get, like, headliner cash. Like, that in itself must have felt great for Cody to turn down.
Yeah.
Being the Elite to go on the network in full, like the archives to be lifted off YouTube to go exclusive on the network with no doubt huge residuals coming their way as a result. Mailbox money, as Jim Ross calls it, checks for doing nothing. And my favourite bit, and something that Meltzer, quote, said he'd never heard WWE offer before, a six-month window where even though they'd signed three-year deals, they could just opt out and leave if they didn't like it. Like, all of this money, all of these perks, 3 years, and after 6 months, if you don't like it, you can go. I want to say this again. As much as this screams of WWE not realizing that All Elite Wrestling was in the works,
yeah,
isn't it funny to think that they thought it was and that they could talk them out of it? Like, what if they knew everything? What if they had a mole or somebody that was like, oh, there's this guy, Tony Khan. He runs Jacksonville Jaguars and Fulham in the Premier League. He's got money. Like, this is happening. This is not like some indie guys trying to make it work. This is like, he's got billions. This is happening. And then they're like, what's like, Paul's going, my dad's billions are bigger than your dad's billions. Sign my contract. It's so funny to think of them like being arrogant enough to believe that these deals would get it over the line. And we can all be grateful that they turned it down.
Yeah, the only thing that would have been funny is if they had gone in for 6 months and then gone, right, thanks for the money, bye. And then just anyway. It's insane that it was a version of creative control was hinted at, which I suppose was the illusion of if you don't like it, then you can leave. The only other person I can think of that was offered, come, we'll pay you loads of money, and if you don't like it, you can leave whenever you want, is Adnan Virk. So I don't know anyone else who's had that sort of deal. But honestly, just I can't stop looking at this visual of the Elite being the Elite and the AEW symbol being on the old WWE network, which I kind of miss as well.
I'm starting to miss that too. I love the idea that like we can change the like the go-to phrases in like in wrestling like analysis. We could say, oh, what kind of contract you got? Brothers on Virk money. It used to be like, oh, you wanted a Sting deal? You wanted Sting money? That was just this like turn of phrase for like 750, 800 in WCW. Nobody made Sting money until the outsiders came in, apart from Hogan. And now it's like nobody comes into WWE on Virk money anymore. Those days are over. Those days are long gone.
I got accused of being, I think, both an NXT shill and an AEW shill over the last couple of days, by the way. It's just, I haven't got a dog in this fight is what I'm trying to say, but it is preposterous to consider something like this. And the only other thing I remember from around this time maybe was after they tried and failed, like you say, to just throw money at the problem, they went, just try and claim the word Elite. Didn't they have like a load of promos for a pay-per-view? And they're like, yep, here we are. It's the Elite of wrestling as we know. So
that sounds about, if I'm not mistaken, that sounds about right, because it's in my head right around the same time on Being the Elite, they had Kaz as like this Triple H figure with the sledgehammer trying to get them to sign contracts. So like every now and then you would hear this like grunting man coming in with like, I'm sure the camera like just revealed a little bit of a giant nose or something and like long hair and like they were getting letters sent through. You know, like in I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Yeah.
Where like they'd get a letter slipped through saying like, what's it going to be? And like as if all these guys were going to sign with this mythical character, Paul.
It's brilliant. It's crazy to think that's only 3 years ago as well. And look at the way the landscape of the wrestling industry has changed. But tell us about your memories from 2018 and read the whole article, 10 Things You Didn't Know About WWE in 2018. We haven't even had a chance to talk about Raw 25 or Ronda Rousey or of course, the Ultimate Deletion match and what Vince McMahon thought of it. See if you can guess and see if it measured up to what you think. WhatCulture.com, 10 things you didn't know about WWE in 2018. But let us know your thoughts at WhatCultureWWE, of course, on Twitter. Watch there. You can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all, as I said, at What Culture WWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. But this has been another Top 10 Debate. My thanks to this article's author, Michael Hamplett. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.